Hello everyone, thank you so much for tuning in to CNBC TV 18's Parenting Podcast, Questions That Need Answers, Mom and Dad Have Them Too. I'm your host Manisha Natarajan. Today, I have a very interesting guest with me. She's a celebrated mom, an author and a filmmaker, and she's taken some bold decisions of homeschooling her two teenage daughters. I'm going to find out what does it entail to take a path which is not the regular beaten path. Let's welcome Natasha Badwar. Natasha, thank you very much for, you know, speaking to us on this.
Thank you, Manisha. This is such a pleasure, such an honor, and so exciting to be talking to someone who has been a friend and a colleague, the kind of things we've done together when we were teenagers in our own career, in a sense.
I did know, and I was always sure that you're going to go on to do some remarkable things in life. But I just never envisaged a scene where you and I would be sitting across each other and talking about parenting and recording a show together. So that's amazing.
It's really wonderful. Quite fantastic how our worlds come together again and again.
I know. So tell me, so three daughters, two of them are teens right now. And I've been instructed by several of my colleagues who want to know this. You've taken that big decision of, I will not say brave, because it's just a big decision. Brave or not, we will ask you 20 years later of homeschooling two of your daughters, the elder ones, Seher and Eliza. Tell me now, initially it was a brave decision, but now as they're teens, how are you dealing with it?
Okay.
Or how is it all coming together?
First, the terminology. There is homeschooling, there is unschooling, there's free schooling, there's world schooling, there's travel schooling. And of all of those, what we have chosen as a lifestyle choice for our family is unschooling, which means that we look at ways of learning without looking at school curriculum as a guide.
Right.
So homeschooling is often, not choosing the school as a space, but learning the same kind of curriculum at the same pace in your own home, using your own tools as a family. And in unschooling, you don't choose the curriculum either. You really embrace what is called self-learning. You give yourself as a parent and as a growing child the time and the space and the attitudes to be able to discover your own rhythm, to be able to discover your own loves, your own passions, your own interests, to see what connects to another, to choose your subjects as and when they are of great interest to you, and to develop your own set of learning tools, in a sense.
So this is unschooling, is so unstructured that it's probably frightening for people like me who are very boxed in.
What is the involvement of a parent, let me say? The perspective on structure is that you do have, everybody has a natural way of structuring their lives. You know, the seasons are structured, days and nights are structured, our body's rhythm is structured, we wake up fresh, you know, a healthy person wakes up fresh, a healthy person needs a nap or a rest at some time, you get tired, you reboot, you work in spurts, then you need a break. So there are natural structures that we can embrace. In a way, schooling and work structures have tried to mimic that. So we have weekdays and weekends, we have a half day in school, we have a little bit of sports, a little bit of crafts. Those things have happened, but as these institutions have become bigger and bigger, the structure to the individual, the structure seems imposed. It has almost become as if a structure that is planned to fit a large number of people actually does not serve the individual interests of anyone. So the topper is feeling boxed in, the artist is feeling boxed in, the one who's interested in physics and music doesn't know how to make time for it. The one who wants to swim and do football has to choose between one and the other. So, you know, structures made for large numbers of people, which is what our schools and corporations are, have become, do not work for individuals. And at some point, you come to a point where you have to take a decision. Do I have the right to choose my path as an individual? And can the family function as an individual unit? Can it create its own community instead of having to belong to
a structured community? So how do you decide on the girls' curriculum? I mean, are they going to, have they broken away from all the boards, the CBSEs and the ICSEs and the IBs, and we're still having a conversation around which board is better for our children? Well, how do you really look at or benchmark their learning? That's something that you will have to build as an individual family, right?
Yeah, so again, you examine the idea of benchmarking learning. Because again, what we have done as a society, as a world culture, is try to homogenize those benchmarks. You know, by 16, you should be able to do this. By 10, you should be able to do this. By a certain age, you should have outgrown that interest and be ready for a new interest. And from our lived experience as middle-aged adults, we know that there are interests that come up as and when we are ready for them. You know, I may not have been ready to learn how to strum a guitar when I was 16, when it was the cool thing for me to do, but I may be ready to learn how to strum a guitar at 47. We have made career switches, we have had to learn new skills as and when technology has changed, ways of working have changed. And you know, you learn as an adult that you're really always adapting, and to be adaptable, to be empathetic to how the world is changing around you, how people's needs are changing around you, is to be a successful adult. And somehow these first 20 years of very structured education seem to retard your ability to be an adaptable, empathetic person. You know, you have to go through this. You know, it's in our language also. Abhi padhai ke saal hain, uske baad maze kar lena.
Correct. Absolutely.
You know? And then abhi it's your early career, uske baad maze kar lena. Abhi you've just started an entrepreneurial project, uske baad kar lena. So somewhere the balance of our lives is completely out, and we know from our own individual experiences how much anxiety, how much stress, how much psychosomatic symptoms that leads to. And I often wonder, Manisha, what kind of decisions my husband and I would have been taking if we didn't have children. Because in a sense, right now, our decisions are being led by the children's needs. And when you are parents, you find that when you work hard to attune yourself to what they need, you really have to learn to look in a very fresh and original way at the world around you. You know, you are being told by schools that this is okay, this is not okay, but your heart tells you as a parent, your intuition tells you, your experience tells you that this is actually fine. That if she doesn't want to do this right now, but actually wants to do something, spend many hours doing something else at this age, isn't that what following your passion is? You know, so all the life advice, life skills that will come later in our self-help books, why not allow ourselves to practice them from early childhood?
So I'm going to ask you some practical questions, because I'm a very boxed in person, and as I'm listening to you, I'm already recounting in my head all that I'm doing wrong with my children and how much am I boxing them, even though I think that I'm allowing them space.
Right and wrong.
I know, yeah. I know. And there is no right or wrong in parenting. But just explain to me, you know, your children both the elder daughters did go to school for a while. Yeah. And then they decided and opted out. Does it mean more involvement of the parents? How do you allow them to find their passion? Again, maybe the word allow is wrong. I'm getting so careful about the terminologies I'm using. I'm actually getting nervous, but no. How do you ensure that they find their passion, right? Because sometimes you feel that children are so young, whether they'll be able to discover it. Is there a worry? Are you have to be more involved? Run us through that.
I would say that in a way, parental involvement is the same. I think what's also important to say is that we did choose mainstream schooling for our children we made small tweaks, you know, when we moved out of South Delhi to this suburb of Greater Noida, which is quieter, which is slower. We chose a very local school. We chose a very new school for a while. It worked for them for many years, and then we felt that they had outgrown their school. Mm. So we chose the finest mainstream school that we found within a 20-kilometer radius of our home, and they went to that school for 2 years as well. It's when the older girls became 13 and 15
that they hit the teen years.
One had just entered and the other had done 2 years. We felt that we were, in a sense, always firefighting, that we were constantly trying to solve problems that were being created by a structure that we had accepted. And when you're very young parents, you expect that because you think it's because you lack the skills. You think you have to learn how to, you know, make sure that they reach in time, finish their homework.
And you're very hard on yourself if you're unable to do it well.
So as a young parent, you're looking at, you know, you're kind of thinking it's because I don't have enough skills. And then somewhere in the middle years, you find that I have done everything. I have learned to be brave. I have learned to speak to the principal. I have negotiated with the teachers constantly. I am actively participating in every community that we belong to, whether it's their sports, their music, their literary interests, or their school. And yet, something about it is not fitting the needs of the children. You know that you're trying to adapt. You're teaching your children to be realistic, to have rational, you know, practical expectations. You're negotiating with the institutions you've also chosen, because we did start with the confidence that the schools we choose, the communities we choose, would have become far more progressive than they were when we were children.
True.
But a lot of parents today are actually facing up to the reality that many things have not progressed in the way that we expected them to. They have in many ways regressed or been very static.
Very static, no?
So for example, the understanding of schooling systems of multiple talents, their understanding of the special needs, the different ways in which children learn, not only children who we label as special needs children, but also every single child
learns differently.
Literally every single child. You know, you have a different voice, you have different colored eyes, you have a different way of walking, you have a different way of learning. And we really are somehow putting far more pressure on children as well as on ourselves to be a much more homogenized society.
Of
course,
culturally,
even culturally. While we have a lot more choices, everybody's supposed to choose the same. Everybody's supposed to be watching the same show, wearing the same clothes, talking the same way. And that felt like a raw deal for children who are growing up. You do, as a parent, an idealistic parent and a loving parent, want to give them a space in which they can enjoy their creativity.
Every minute should be enjoyable.
Yeah.
Why just?
I mean, how
know?
Much we are discovering in our middle years that there are so many talents we have that we never knew of, or we were sometimes shamed for. And that there is no list of good abilities to have. There are so many things that we have, as a, you know, the world has discovered civilizationally again and again that it is good for you. We know that doing things with our hands is good for us, and yet schools make very little time. It becomes like some unique selling point that you do it for 2 hours a week.
Run us through a day. Now, both the girls who are in the, are now, I'm struggling for words, are unschooled. What is their day like? And I'm not asking because I feel that there should be a structure, but you said like there's a natural structure that you will find. I'm sure they would have found their rhythms as well. So it'll be interesting for our parents and listeners to figure out how has that worked.
Like I said, because it's been, because it's fairly new for us, it's really, we took the plunge. We took the plunge after we met a community of unschooling parents in the Learning Societies and Conference in Bangalore. And once we met people who seemed to be doing really well, who seemed to have, you know, to have chosen a different way of being and were thriving in it, we knew that we were not the only ones, that we were not going to be isolated in our search. So it's been about a year and a half since Seher and Aliza, who are our older daughters, have stopped going to school. And so the first thing I did, and that's how I learn, is that I will go, and I know you learn like that, I'll just go and read. I will research, I will read first-person accounts, I will read experts. I read a lot of blogs, I read a lot of parents, I saw a lot of videos of unschooling children. And I figured that the number one thing I have to do is literally do nothing. I have to learn to not do the things that I have learned are the ways of being a good parent. So I have to stop intervening. I have to stop hinting. I have to stop
suggesting.
All of that has to go out of our body language, out
battle.
Of our... So it's the you know, in a sense, we are learning as much as they are, both their father and I. And so I wrote about this also. The first couple of months, they just slept. They slept and they slept and they slept. And we were like, okay, it's been 1 month, 2 months, 3 months.
My
How
God.
Much are they going to sleep? And then you realize, my God, if this is what their body needed, if this is what their soul needs,
wow,
and that structure that they are having to function in, which is stressing them out, which is making them anxious, which is making them crabby and angry and lash out at their own parents and at each other, and making them so discontent with where they are, even though all the privileges of the world
are with them,
are with them.
Absolutely.
So they really slept it out for a long time. And now I look back a year and a half later, and Seher has certainly found her own rhythm. I just have to now, every few days, ask her what she's doing. She kind of creates her own projects. She started making pins. So it seems like such a useless thing to do. What are you doing? I'm making pins that you can wear on your jackets or put on your bags. But it's a meticulous process where she learns first to draw, then she cuts it out, then she makes it robust. So there's a lot of handwork involved, there's art involved, there is physics and chemistry and how much glue and what is the product I need, how much do I need to melt this, fix this, how to make it something that does not break immediately. So because she had the time and the permission to do it, she was doing it, and through that, she's learning to discipline herself. She's, you know, waking up in time. So she'll come down at 7 and she'll say, I'm going to bake now. And then at 9 o'clock, she'll be sitting with brownies, and each one of us can have one.
Unbelievable.
So to simply be able to break out of that, again, very boxed notion that you must have one or two hobbies and you must really concentrate on them. We have so many interests.
Yeah,
we discover that actually knitting calms us down. Sometimes a Sudoku is what we need. Solving a Sudoku is what we need. That's our way of engaging with something mathematical. Sometimes you just want to go for a walk or a swim or a run. So they'll be cycling. They'll be making things with their hands. They read a lot. So they actually spend more time with books than the school would have prescribed them to do.
In fact, the school reading's becoming a challenge for children who are going to regular schools because the school curriculum is so structured, it's killing creativity, and it's such an effort to read. And most parents say we have to ensure our children read every day, and it's becoming a battle. We just don't give them time to be able to say.
So that's one of the reactions the children have. Every now and then we'll meet a friend who will say, teach my child to read, and they'll be like, can you just not talk like that?
Yes.
maybe they don't want to read, maybe they want to play a game instead.
Yes.
You know, because there are so many ways of expressing yourself, and at different times of the day, year, life, you will choose different ways of expressing yourself. and to get to lose the idea that it has to be one thing. I think the world has moved on so much, but our ways of coping have not adapted as much as they should have.
I think we are taking the path of least resistance. We parent more by fear rather than freedom, isn't it? We are fearful that if the child does not go through a learning process, doesn't do well in academics, is going to have a very difficult future, right?
Yeah.
So we are parenting with fear. We are not parenting with freedom.
And really the question that comes to my mind a lot, Manisha, is our parents parented with fear. My parents did. My parents were first generation big city folks. Both of them had come either from a village or a small town.
Like all our parents.
Yeah, they were
first generation
English speakers. They were first generation graduates. They were so desperate to raise us as people who would adapt in the urban context and in the world context. So we had to speak in English. We had to go to public schools. They could barely afford. Right? So we've grown up with that, and then we grew up and there were so many new industries that we chose, like the media, for example, like management, like IT. They didn't know anything about it.
Yes.
Right? Their peers would counsel them and say, no, this is something good, let her do it.
Hmm.
When we chose a lot of these things, for the longest time in our generation, parents didn't understand what media people did.
Absolutely.
Right? And similarly, so we are the generation who
has
actually
go beyond.
Seized the privileges. Mm. And I wonder where our fear comes from, because we are already parents who have the power to negotiate with the world, who can go and talk to a teacher or a policeman or a doctor and be one-on-one. I mean, we have access to the internet.
Yes.
We have access to so much information. What did our mothers have?
And we can challenge
so
authority.
So if they had fear in their hearts, when they stood in a visa queue, we know that they didn't grow up in the world in which this was normal, but we did. And we still are as afraid of being seen differently or seen as different. And I think that we really need to resist that as individuals.
Mm.
Because the children will teach us. They will not buy our fears.
They're revolting in a bad way. They lash out.
And
you talked about lashing out and, moving the conversation to teen years. I mean, you took that decision to unschool them in their teen years. These are also some of the most difficult years. And I see children lashing out. And I think most of the lashing out comes from us and the system forcing them to follow a beaten path.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So here they are, they are very clued in, they know what's right, what's wrong. They have a sense of morality and ethics. They know more than us about climate change, about how our lifestyles, the lifestyles that are acceptable to our, to the corporates from where our incomes come, as well as to the schools where they go to learn. So this 1 week of giving week or this 1 week of collecting trash in your neighborhood, it's not, they're not buying into
it's
that.
It's just an ornament.
They're not buying into
yes,
that.
They're not
they
buying
they
into
know
it.
That we are teaching them in a hypocritical way to be hypocritical. Mm-hmm. And a lot of children, almost all children, can see through that.
Mm-hmm.
Culture demands that we teach them to dumb down. We teach them to not challenge these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But this is really, if you look at some of the most inspired leaders in the world today, you've got Greta Thunberg, she's a teenager.
Hmm.
You've got Malala, who was a teenager when she found her voice.
Absolutely.
Before she was shot as well as after she was shot. You have school children in the United States who are challenging gun law because they're in the firing line, literally.
Hmm.
And because of the internet, it's a connected world. You don't have to be isolated in your community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we are not celebrating as much as we should the privileges that technology are bringing to us,
mm-hmm.
is bringing to us. Yeah.
So moving to certain things which, teenagers right now in regular school systems are going through, one of them is a lot of mental anguish, right? Mental anxiety. Part of it could be because of the structure, but there's also peer pressure. Now, you have a situation at home, Natasha, where both your daughters are perhaps company to each other and they don't have that peer pressure, but not everyone can take that bold decision of unschool their children. How do you deal with that? I mean, are there any insights that parents can gain from?
They do have peer pressure, like everyone does. And I realize that every problem I want to solve in their life, I have to solve in my life first.
Really?
Literally.
Wow. I mean, you know, that's a gem.
when you begin to wonder, why is this child so scared of what the teacher might say, you have to look at yourself and say, why am I still so scared of what my boss might say? Why have I not found my voice, even though I've got a big fat salary, I've come this far in my career? You know, why am I letting peer pressure box me in too? And we see that so much. I mean, now that we have WhatsApp to create these groups constantly, we see that despite the fact that there are so many media in which you can express your opinion, you know, all of social media, it's democratic, right?
But it's also hugely pressurizes you to conform.
And yet, yeah, we have allowed all of these new media to become platforms of conformity. And if we don't challenge peer pressure, if we don't look at our own fear of being left out, isolated, being wrong, being seen as wrong, there's no way the children are going to, there's no way we are going to be able to give that to the children, that confidence to the children. So we want them to be brave, and we have to learn to be brave.
We have to. Okay, one more question, privacy. Now, when we were growing up, there was no concept of teen privacy, literally. You grew up in small homes. Even if you had large homes, they were filled with family members. You were expected to eat with your family. There was never a time when you could just slam the door on your parents and go inside the room and actually think that privacy is a privilege, which now I think teens do. Do we give it to them? Do we say, all right, this, how do we draw boundaries around privacy and say, look, yes, you can get your own time, but then yes, it's also non-negotiable. Do you think it's non-negotiable for them to come and perhaps have a meal with everybody every day, or just let them be and decide, if I don't want to have a meal with my parents or my family for 2 months, 3 months, it's all right. I'm very curious to hear your opinion on that.
No, I have to admit, I have to share that questions of privacy were one of the most anxiety-inducing for me. So while we didn't have a lot of privacy when we were young, you know, if we had a two-bedroom flat, we also had our grandparents staying with us. You know, a lot of us grew up sleeping in the drawing room or the living room or sharing rooms, etc. So while we didn't have privacy, we did grow up with a very strong notion that we must have privacy.
Right? Yes,
we did grow up
we
with
craved
that.
It. There's did, no we, doubt we about it. We craved it.
So, in fact, even when we were designing this house with its, you know, double floors and separate rooms for the children, they were very little when this house was being designed, and I was already worrying about where they will sit when they want to hide from me. I was already worried about not being able to reach out to them when I want to. If they close the door, they won't be able to hear me. I need to see what they're doing. So there was an acquired, an inherited anxiety that I already had when they were very little about how we will negotiate this when they are older and when they are not coming to me anymore to say, read me this book, or you know, I want to watch this, when all those tools are actually going to be theirs. So I did start with anxiety, and this is again something that I have taught myself by writing about again and again, that trust is something you have to learn, and trust is not something our culture
teaches.
It does not teach us. I mean, to this day, our parents, our aunts, our neighbors are allowed to ask us questions. Even if we might be touching, you know, late 40s, 50s, to which we feel that we owe them answers.
Yes, absolutely.
We owe them,
And we owe them an explanation of our actions.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, our relatives will get offended if they, and then you have to kind of reveal this and that. And so we live in a culture, both traditionally as well as modern, where trust is not part, is not something that we practice enough. And I learned that the only way to negotiate this is to keep the conversation open, is to talk every day, and as parents, to learn a new language, to learn a new demeanor. You know, there are times when I have noticed with my youngest, with whom I have actually been the most casual, calm, mellow mother. I mean, I've often said that with her, I'm almost her grandmother. you know, all loving and no discipline.
I'm like that with my third one too.
And yet, there have been times when I have said to her, what is the homework for today, and seen her stiffen. And I think to myself, but I'm, you know, what is it? Why do they still have this fear? Why is she pushing me back? And it makes me think that perhaps there is still something in my body language. Perhaps there is still something in the way other people ask her questions that makes her think that she is being, you know, she's being pushed to the corner to answer in a certain way. That if she says, I have a lot of homework, I'm going to say, abhi tak kiya kyun nahi? And if she says, nahi hai, I'm going to say, show me.
She's already in a flight mode.
Yes.
Her body responses are to, you know, okay, I'm getting attacked and I am now going into my defense mode, right?
So we may think, and I have actually thought very much that because I'm doing very mindful parenting, because I have taken so many life decisions to be much more present in their lives, that that we will not have these issues. And yet we see that their fear, the knot in their stomach is pretty much the same. So clearly we need to do a lot more. That communication has to change from the parent. And just to touch upon that thing about eating a meal together, you know, nobody minds eating a meal with the family if it's a happy time, if it's a relaxed time, if that's not the time when you start asking all the questions or start making all the judgments on each other.
See, very important.
Or
they probably
that's not
don't
the time
want to
when
come
your
down
husband
for that.
And you are now deciding that you must talk politics, you must talk war, you must talk finances, you must talk demonetization.
They don't care about these things.
They're done with it.
Yeah.
I mean, also we are having repetitive conversations as adults. And there's so much in their lives. There's so many things that they're distracted by, interested in. And we want them to be. We want them to be.
Teens don't share. Or you're saying they will share if you unlearn and you learn to trust them.
Yeah, absolutely. So what unschooling has brought into our families, and it will take many years for us to really get there, is you know, remove this hierarchy between the adult and the child. This that we accept as natural. And if we want that they should be, you know, that we should be, and they should live these very mindful lives where the hierarchies between class, between gender, between races are being questioned and are being rearranged.
Then why are we not bringing
them
at home?
To create a more equal world, then the same thing needs to happen between the grandparents and the parents, between the parents and the children. So it really becomes a new way of looking at things every day. And
my God, it's not an easy path. Oh my God, I'm going to take back so much, Natasha. Unfortunately, we have to, you know, end this one here. But I cannot tell you, there is so much to introspect, so much to take back from this conversation, Natasha Badwar. It's been a pleasure. And
thank
I hope you,
you
can join us again on Questions That Need Answers. Mom
absolutely,
and Dad have them too.
Absolutely, there's so much to talk about. I'd love to.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.